Welcome back to the Caught Red Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Jesse Light.
I'm Megan Light.
We are just two dog lovers talking about true crime, horror movies, and most likely our dogs too.
It never fails. We get started and somebody's got to drink water.
I told her, get a drink before we start. And she didn't want one, but now she wants one.
She's double digits. She can do whatever the hell she wants. Yeah, that's right. We're talking about you.
Like to get to go on trips to the park without her brothers and sister, huh?
Mm-hmm. Special treatment.
Yeah, we finally got some good weather, so we were productive. Megan finally fixed the window of her Jeep.
Yes, and it really wasn't even that hard. I just had to do it, and it had to be decent enough to do it outside. I could have done it in the garage these last couple weeks, but it's been so cold, and I knew my hands were going to be useless. I got nicks and cuts and scratches.
I really thought it was going to be a two-person job, but you did that shit yourself. Good job.
Thank you. Props. I watched a video on YouTube a couple months ago.
Imagine not having YouTube, for one.
It would have been a lot of trial and error. The hardest part, replacing the window regulator, was I had to manhandle, but carefully, and crank the window down low enough to where I could get the bolts out to take the piece of glass out. Everything else was simple, but it was almost like a blind job because there's only a couple of holes in the door and there's only that sliver at the top, you know? And I mean, I was just feeling my way around. Like I couldn't see anything I was doing.
My big hands probably wouldn't have fit it in between there either.
Yeah. But it's done and the Jeep is ready.
Until something else.
Well, I mean, there are a couple things that do need to be addressed, but they are not needed at the moment.
Yeah, but I was telling Megan, it was like the termite inspector showed up while she was working on it, and I just picture them like checking her out like she's Megan Fox from Transformers. My God. Opening the hood up, popping the hood, and then just leaning over.
God.
Getting there nice and deep like.
I thought about that when we were washing the cars.
But other than that, yeah, beautiful weather.
Mm-hmm. Thank God. It's been time.
We did watch a pretty good movie.
Which one?
Was one of those ones that's only like 4.9 out of 10.
But oh my gosh, yes.
We were like, this is better than 4.9 out of 10. It's called Cursed Friends.
Oh, it was so freaking hilarious. It was a Comedy Central movie.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Comedy, fantasy, horror movie. It's got our girl from Nailed It,
Nicole Breyer.
And then it's got Rob Riggle, of course. I love him.
Mm-hmm.
And then this girl named Jessica Lowe, which we recognized from Blended.
She was doing the shimmy. How romantic.
Yeah. Hilarious. But
it was so good.
Pretty much it's four friends wake on Halloween and realize the predict your future game, which is MASH.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure everybody our age and older probably played that. I don't know if it's still a thing.
I don't think it is, yeah. Which is sad.
But they played it back in 2002 and things start to come true in disturbing ways. So they have to like band together and defeat
the demon ghost thing.
The creepy demon ghost thing. So I would definitely recommend that one.
I'd rewatch it for sure.
Other than that, Megan's just been reading a shit ton of books lately. She's up to, 11 on the year already?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Well, I only have, one more day tomorrow to finish it, or it's going to have to roll into February.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. And then you've got a case for us today.
I do indeed.
I'm ready to hear it.
I don't think I've told you much about it, except for you came in when I was watching that episode at the very end.
And you were walking on your treadmill and typing at the same time, and I was peeking over your shoulder, and you're like, hey, don't look.
Yeah, you damn creeper. Get out of here. Go on, get.
Well, go ahead.
Okay.
Have at it.
Here are the sources for today. The show is called The Murder Tapes. The episode in particular I watched was from season 5. It's episode 3, and it's called Footprints in the Snow. I looked up some case text.
Oh, how fun.
Yes.
Case law.
Yep. And it's State versus DeWise. I looked up a few obituaries and found a grave for this episode as well. There is the Montana Department of Justice Domestic Violence Fatality Review.
That's a mouthful.
It really was, to type it out too. PsychCentral.com, Montana Right Now News, KRTV News, KBZK News, AP News, and NBC Montana. So yes, we're in Montana today.
Clearly.
Imagine being at home. It's the early morning. It's cold out. And so you're enjoying your warm cup of tea or coffee. Unless you're Jesse, then it's neither of those things. And you hear a knock at your door. When you open it, you are surprised to see your neighbor, Audrea Butler, but she isn't stopping by to say hi or borrow a cup of sugar. In fact, she's frantic, scared, and rambling on about needing the police. She'd stayed with a friend the night before, and when she arrived home in the morning, her back door was kicked in. There were pieces of wood splintered all over the floor. For example, like part of the door frame was laying in her dining room. When she stuck her head outside, she noticed several large footprints in the snow outside the door and leading around the house. Even though she was afraid, she quickly ran upstairs. She would find that her two roommates had been shot. One was deceased and the other one was holding on by a thread. One house, three women. Were all three targets? Did Audrea get lucky? Was this a home invasion gone wrong? Many questions surrounded this case, but it wouldn't take the police long to hone in on one suspect. Once they do, they will uncover another victim, someone who was hurting just as much, but in a different way. At 1306 Idaho Street in Belgrade, Montana, live three women: Audrea Butler, the homeowner, Ashley Van Hermert, and Lauren DeWise. The three women had been living together for only a few months when this story took place. Lauren joined Audrea and Ashley in the house in November 2017. It was 9:30 a.m. on Sunday, January 7th, 2018, when a call came in to the police. A man stated that his neighbor discovered her house had been broken into and that her roommates had been shot. Once the police arrived on the scene, Audrea Butler met them out front of her house. She retold her account of that morning, and the police proceeded with caution, the initial responding officer waiting for his backup. Thanks to the body cam footage shown on the episode from Murder Tapes, I saw, and you can too, everything as they entered. Immediately, when the officers entered the house, they could hear a voice crying out for help. They went room by room, following the voice as they cleared the house. It was unknown at the time whether the threat was still present. They finally arrived upstairs to one of the bedrooms. In one was Lauren DeWise, deceased. She was lying on her bed, and it was clear that she'd been that way for quite some time because she was cold to the touch. Later, Lauren's autopsy showed that she had sustained 5 gunshot wounds from a small caliber pistol. They could still hear the cries and the pleads of help from another room. Inside the next room, they found Ashley Van Hermert, shot and bleeding profusely, but still alive.
Whoever shot her probably ran out of bullets.
Who knows? The body cam footage from one of the officers, Officer Robinson, showed him entering Ashley's room, and he found her on the floor next to her door. And she kept saying, "Please don't shoot me," and her head is kind of bobbling all about. The officer identified himself, but she is still uncertain what's going on. She can't comprehend. She also couldn't see anything, even with Officer Robinson hovering over her. She kept asking over and over again, "Where are you?" Ashley had been shot several times in the head, chest, and upper extremities. With the assistance of the EMTs, the officer was able to carry Ashley downstairs to the ambulance. The shot to her head wasn't the only injury that needed immediate surgical attention. She had sustained a shallow shot to her right carotid artery. She had broken ribs, a punctured lung, damage to her right ulna, and a fracture to her right scapula. Ashley was very lucky. The police will later learn from her statements once she regains her memory that she had been lying shot, bleeding out for about 6 to 9 hours.
Wow.
She also would have 2 strokes while in the hospital. And it makes you wonder what kind of monster the police were going to be looking for. How and why would someone just break into this house and shoot these women? With the help from Audrea and later Ashley, the police would be pointed to one man, Paul DeWise, Lauren's estranged husband. Lauren DeWise was born Lauren Deborah Walder in Lakeland, Florida. She and her family moved up north to the New Jersey area for the majority of her school years. She began college up there, but Lauren would return to her roots to finish college in Pensacola, graduating in 2005. She would end up being a teacher at Jim C. Bailey Middle School for several years. During her time back in Florida, she met Paul, assuming it was at the same school because he was also a teacher there. And the two got married in 2008. The two decided to pack it all up, buy an RV, and travel, along with Paul's 2 children from his previous marriage, 15-year-old Joseph, 17-year-old Natalie. Lauren became pregnant and gave birth to a girl, Jennifer. And then in 2015, 2016-ish, the DeWise family would end up in Montana, and that's where Lauren wanted to call home. Her friends described her as outdoorsy, and she loved to go camping, so it seemed like a great fit. Initially, she worked as a part of the staff in a hospital, but then she got a job at a bank, and soon she moved up the ladder to being the bank manager at Rocky Mountain Bank in Bozeman. And Bozeman and Belgrade are about 20 minutes apart. She was a wonderful woman, loving, enduring, welcoming. She had a personality that captured your attention. Life couldn't have been more perfect for the DeWise family. But this is a true crime podcast, and things are never what they seem.
There's always a catch.
Always. Lauren had met her future roommate, Audrea, when she became one of her clients. Audrea was a personal trainer at the time in Bozeman. The two quickly became friends. Lauren had started working with Audrea about 3 months prior to her moving in. Audrea had once volunteered at Haven, which is a nonprofit that focuses on helping those who've had experiences with domestic violence, and she started seeing the signs in Lauren. There was something going on with Lauren that she couldn't really put her finger on quite yet, but then she started to see bruises. And the final straw before she said anything was when Lauren came to the gym and she had a visible black eye. And then Lauren's boss at the bank had also made notes about seeing bruises and had to have Paul, Lauren's husband, removed from the premises more than once. Audrey believed that Lauren was afraid to leave her husband and that she didn't know how to move herself to a safe place. Lauren had told her at length about the abuse that she had gone through because of Paul. It was meant to be that the two women would cross paths, and Audrea helped Lauren by offering her a room at her house. Mid-November 2017 is when Lauren moved in with Audrea and Ashley, and then the incident happened a couple months later. According to Audrea's testimony, Lauren's move didn't stop Paul from harassing her or any of the women. Paul would send Audrea messages on Facebook to back off and stay out of his marriage. The day Lauren moved in, Paul was parked outside the house, beating on the door, sending Lauren dozens of text messages. Paul showed up at the house in the middle of the night one evening in December 2017 and just began beating on the door again, waking the women. The women were getting terrified at the situation, so much so that Audrea borrowed a shotgun from a friend and would sleep with it close by her.
what is this guy's story? I mean, did he do this to his other wife too?
I never saw, but I'm sure he did. Why else would you divorce that man?
Right.
Lauren was constantly receiving messages that threatened her and were terrifying to read, but then Paul would send something sweet and would apologize. The next time the estranged couple saw each other was at Jennifer's birthday party, which was Lauren and Paul's daughter. And it was at the DeWise house, and that was on January 4th. Once she returned back to her home at Idaho Street, Lauren told Audria how horrible it was to be that she could never go back, not to her house, not to her husband. Paul had been the same, belittling her and picking at her. He made her feel awful.
In front of everybody, too, I'm sure.
I'm sure, yes. 2 days later, Lauren had told both women that living with them was the safest she had felt in years. The next day, she would be dead. The rumor was that Lauren and Paul were supposed to meet to go over their divorce papers on the 7th, which was the morning she was found murdered. While the forensic team is going over the house at 1306 Idaho Street, Ashley was fighting for her life, going through multiple surgeries. She pulled through and by some miracle was still alive. Upon hearing this great news, detectives go to speak with her. While she's in recovery, investigators found it difficult to talk to her. She was coherent, but her memories, they weren't there yet. The detective would ask her some questions, and she couldn't remember anything during the time before or after the shooting, and she tried really hard. She had even asked at one point if they had more specific questions that maybe could register something, and then she could be helpful. But the detectives chose to not do that. They'd rather let her rest and not re-traumatize her and stress her to make sure she can heal properly. And then, of course, as time passed, she would regain her memories. The last thing she did remember before the incident was that she and her boyfriend, Ralph, had gone out. He dropped her off at the house. He waited to make sure she had gone inside, and then she got ready for bed like it was any other evening. The police brought in Ashley's boyfriend, Ralph, and he was helpful. He gave him his phone. He gave him everything they asked for. He was the last person to see Ashley and to be at the house. He was ruled out quickly and eliminated Ashley being the target of the shooting. So this turned them back to Lauren. It must be her. She's the one they will need to focus on. They start digging more into her life, especially her marriage. When the police start to look closer at Lauren, they found out rather quickly that she was seeking a divorce from her husband. He was next on the list to find, not just to interview him, but they did need to notify him of Lauren's death.
And I'm worried about Jennifer, too, at this point. Like, of course, they probably aren't.
They probably didn't even look that far into it to know they had that baby. The fact that a firearm was used in the attack, the police took extra precautions while locating Paul. He was already a person of interest based on the fact because he was the husband. And then, of course, the divorce. Paul was found not too far from his home. He was out on the road, so the Bozeman police did a traffic stop. Paul was very compliant. He did everything he was instructed to do by the officers. He was taken into custody without any incident to be interviewed. On the interview tapes, also from that episode I watched, Paul seemed shocked to hear about his wife, asking what happened, if she was okay. The detective is trying to read Paul, trying to get a sense of whether he was truly surprised by the news or if he was in shock or anything like that. They hadn't learned all the details of the divorce just yet, so they're giving Paul like a temporary benefit of the doubt. The interview was mainly to get an idea of Paul's evening prior and the movements he had done.
What did he sound like to you? Did he look like he was guilty?
He's like kind of hunched over, like leaning over in the chair, and he's like his eyes got big, like, what?
Like he was faking it?
What happened? Is she okay? Like the tone.
Yeah.
So it wasn't
like he was super upset.
But at the same time, you could see that he was hurting in a way. He stated he was home, but he did leave the house close to midnight for a beer run. His son, Joseph, again 15 at the time, went with him. Since this was a friendly chat, Paul was released, but not until he left his phone with the police to be searched. From the interview, it was clear that Paul was upset about his and Lauren's separation and how he really wanted things to work out and them to be together again. After letting Paul go, it was important for the detectives to start working on his timeline and gathering any additional information on him.
Yeah, like what kind of guns he owns. Mm.
Since he so generously mentioned that his 15-year-old son went with him on this beer run, Joseph would be the next person they wanted to talk to. And Detective Sergeant Jeremy Kopp warmed him up by asking questions to get to know him and get an understanding of how he and his sisters were doing after Lauren had moved out. And Joseph told the detective that he and his dad had a great relationship, and even though it was late, he wanted to go with him to the store just to get out of the house. Joseph said that he never heard his dad leave later into the night after they had returned. And he was upset to hear that something had happened to Lauren. She was his stepmom, but the way he described her was his other mom. Just another mom in his life, not step, anything like that. Unfortunately, Joseph's account of the night in question matched his father's, and the detective had no other reason to keep pressing him, and he let the teenager go. So the detectives are busy. They're going over Lauren's life. The forensic team's still back at the house, and they make a discovery. The footprints that are going around the house and near the back door were about to give the police exactly what they needed. There wasn't one set of footprints, but two. One was slightly larger than the other, and all the tracks nearly lined up with each other as they were walking the same direction to and from the house. So there have been two individuals at the house that night. Despite the story Paul told, there wasn't any evidence of anyone else in Lauren's life or her roommates that would have wanted to harm her or them. The police even took extra precaution on Monday the 8th and placed officers at the bank where Lauren was employed just in case it was, you know, a customer or a client that maybe stalked her or wanted some harm to come to her. They just knew in their gut, though, who had done the shooting. They just needed to break his alibi. So the sergeant detective asked Joseph to come back in one more time. And he was good with the teenager. On the tapes, he never pushed Joseph hard. He didn't really even like nudge him. He just sat real close to him and held his hand. And he's like, I just need you to be honest. I need you to tell me the truth. And he just kind of met eyes with him and wouldn't let anything else interrupt them. What had happened affected not just Ashley and Lauren's families, but the detective could tell that something was eating away at Joseph. Joseph's mother was also in the interview and is in the room with him this time, and she knew something was wrong with her son.
Paul made the son go with him?
Mm-hmm.
What?
You can hear Joseph's mom pleading with her son on the tape to talk. Unknown how long they were sitting there, because the tape could have been edited for the purpose of the episode.
Yeah.
But like I said, Sergeant Detective Cobb is comforting Joseph, telling him, you know, take your time, holding his hands. And then you can see it's like a weight lifts off Joseph's shoulders.
You think Joseph's mom knew, or she just could tell that he was hiding something?
I think she could just tell.
Yeah.
Joseph really tells how things were at home, and what happened in the middle of the night on the 6th into the morning of the 7th. Cobb had simply asked him, was it you? And Joseph said it wasn't. He then asked, was it him? And Joseph replied, it was him. Once Joseph started, he couldn't stop. And this has only been like a day or two since the shooting happened. He had seen Lauren and his dad argue on numerous occasions, and that his dad was abusive to Lauren. He'd seen his dad put a tracker on Lauren's car because he was paranoid that she was cheating on him. Anytime Lauren and his dad got into an argument, he would almost insert himself so he could protect his little sisters. Well, his little sister, Jennifer, and then, of course, Natalie is older.
So did Paul Did he hit the little girls too? Or is it just...
I never read that he ever touched his kids. I wouldn't be surprised if they were right. also abused. Joseph had been feeling pretty strong lately that he and his sisters weren't completely safe with his dad. On the night of the 6th, Paul and his kids were watching a movie before bed. Paul had been drinking, but that wasn't unusual. They all go to bed pretty late, but apparently Paul stayed up texting Lauren till almost 3 a.m. Then he woke Joseph up, told him to get ready, but not really telling him what for. Joseph had seen his dad packing a bag earlier in the evening, but just figured it was like work stuff, but it's not his business to know what his dad was doing.
And the police had Paul's phone after the interview, so they knew that he was up till 3 a.m. texting her.
Yes. Unfortunately, Joseph would learn what was in that bag very shortly. After he put clothes on, Paul then told Joseph to leave his phone at the house and get in the car. Joseph did what he was told, uncertain of what his dad was planning to do in the middle of the night, but he was afraid. He was scared for himself and his sisters. As they drove on, Joseph said he kept asking, where are they going? And Paul just ignored him. Then Joseph saw they pulled onto Idaho Street. Paul parked the car. He put on gloves, a mask, and pulled out a pistol. He tried to reassure Joseph that everything was fine as long as he did what he was told, and then gave Joseph a pair of gloves and a mask to wear, and he made Joseph walk in front of him. Paul kicked in the back door. He pushed Joseph inside, kind of keeping him like a lookout. Joseph watched his dad go from room to room, discovering the master bedroom downstairs, but then exiting fairly quickly because, remember, Audria was at a friend's house that night. Paul ventured upstairs, and Joseph could hear him above saying something and then multiple shots. A few seconds passed, and again, he could hear words, and then he heard a gasp, and he recognized it to be Lauren, and then he heard more shots being fired. His dad comes back into his view, and they left. They stopped at a convenience store to get more beer on their way home. So that wasn't a complete lie. They did make a beer run. Just kind of did a little something instead. While Joseph is retelling the night's events, he's just crying. He said he had to. He had no choice. He had to keep them safe, talking about his sisters. Paul and Joseph make it back to their house, and Paul took Joseph's clothes and his and threw them into the wash and showered. Paul left for a brief period of time, taking all the boots with him. Paul then told Joseph to get rid of all his .22 caliber ammunition by tossing them into the Bozeman Pond, which took some time. When he finished, his dad set him down and threatened him and gave him an alibi to tell the police if he should ever need it. That alibi, of course, was what he told the detectives at that very first interview, the same things his dad had already told them. Now that this is all written down and recorded, the police knew that the man that they had already suspected was their prime suspect truly was. They were able to obtain a warrant to search other items. They already had Paul's phone, and now they could really dig into it. And on his phone were these audio recordings and text messages that really did prove Lauren was in an abusive relationship with Paul. Several of the recordings, Paul clearly calls her a lying piece of shit, that he will kill her and that she will die and he will do it. And she's just pleading in these recordings. You can hear him on the episode.
And he just leaves this on his phone.
Isn't that weird too?
So weird.
So strange. Maybe he got off on hearing him be evil to his wife.
Maybe, but he sure wasn't looking out for himself.
No. Lauren is pleading in these recordings, telling him that he hurts her and how she's feeling, and he just dismisses it. And then he tells her that he gave up everything for her and all she cares about is herself.
How strange.
Needless to say, the police got an arrest warrant for Paul DeWise. Yeah.
So he'd just get drunk at night and play these recordings over and over again until finally he decided to go over there and kill her.
Lord only knows what he was thinking. While he was in jail, he got himself an additional charge of felony witness tampering. He made two calls to his daughter. These violated a court order saying that he was not supposed to talk to family or witnesses.
Can't do that.
Mm-mm. The first call was made about a month after his arrest, so about like February 6th. Nothing was said and it ended as quickly as it was made. The second call happened the next day, just hours after the first one that he had done, and it lasted about 12 and a half minutes. And you would have thought he'd be smarter than this since he likes recordings, but because, you know, these are recorded calls.
Well, Larry Milliette liked to talk to his kids.
That's true.
While he was in prison, too.
On this call, Paul said he knew he wasn't supposed to talk to her, but was doing it anyways. He told her that since Joseph was also at the house when the shooting happened, he was just as involved and he should admit he did it. Paul was wanting his own son to take the fall so he could get out. Later in that call, Paul told his daughter that, you know, Joe wasn't that bad and Joseph was still young and he could probably get out when he was like 21 or so. So he's just a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Paul DeWise would go to trial at the end of 2019, where even more came out against him and from his own daughter. Natalie would describe his and Lauren's relationship as unhealthy. She was 17 at the time, so old enough to see what was happening in her home. She could see that her dad had control over Lauren. He made all the decisions in that house. She knew Lauren had marks on her. She even knew about the tracking device in Lauren's car. The night of January 6th, Natalie told the court that her dad woke her up and told her that he killed Lauren and pretty much told Natalie to be a team player. He told her what to say, and just in case, because, you know, Paul's a creature of habit, he made a recording of his instructions for his daughter to follow.
And you could hear all the recordings?
They didn't play that one. I got that from the court documents.
Oh.
But you could hear other ones on that episode.
Why the hell would they want to choose his side? There's no way. He's an idiot.
Yeah, he's dumb. The real nail in the coffin was the testimony from Ashley Van Hermert. She told the events of that horrible night. Her memories had come back, and she remembered seeing Paul walk into her room close to 3:30 in the morning, which makes sense because according to records, he texts Lauren till about 3 a.m. that night.
Did he go after her first or Lauren first? Or Lauren was last, right?
Yes.
Because
according to Joseph, the son, yes.
Joseph heard her.
Yes. The records also showed that his phone had been turned off until he and his family left for church the next morning, so just hours after the shooting. So that doesn't look good for him, regardless. Ashley told about her injuries, how she had to learn how to walk again, talk again, hold objects. She expressed her excitement when she was able to turn a light switch on or ring a doorbell using her left hand.
Dang.
She has to wear a prism in her glasses lens because she lost her peripheral vision in her left eye. Because she had those strokes.
Right.
In the hospital.
I just like to see the look on his face when she's up there testifying.
Ooh.
Like, he probably thought he killed her.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't have to worry about her
being a witness to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Paul DeWise was found guilty of the deliberate homicide of Lauren and the attempted deliberate homicide of Ashley and was sentenced in February 2020 to get this, 220 years in prison without the possibility of parole. Like he'd ever live long enough to get parole anyways.
Hey.
He was 47 when he committed these crimes.
I like it. All right. I'm good with 200 and something years.
Isn't that crazy?
That's fine with me.
Joseph was never charged because he, too, was a victim in all this. There wasn't much following up on Audrea Butler.
That's pretty traumatic for Joseph.
I know.
Gosh.
Poor kid. The homeowner, Audrea, I think I found an article from 2020 that was about her. It was the NBC Montana that I mentioned earlier. And there's an Audie Butler mentioned in this article. And it says that she is a world champion in powerlifting, winning several medals over the course of her career. And she represented the United States in the World Classic Championship.
I wish she was there. She could have
beat his ass.
Yeah.
She mentioned in this article that she has a 6-year-old daughter who she just loves to be an inspiration to. And she doesn't say her name, but I think it might be her because the body cam footage from the murder tapes episode, Lauren's body is found in a very pink bedroom, a child's bedroom with toys. And there is a name, Olivia, with cute letters on the wall. And then, of course, Audria was Lauren's personal trainer. So it makes sense that this might be her that does the powerlifting. Either way, get it, girl. Congrats on your wins.
So how long was Lauren staying with them at that time?
She had only been living with those girls for a month and a half at the most.
So maybe she was sleeping in that room, I guess. Mm-hmm. They didn't have another room.
Bedroom, yeah. Right.
So that would make sense.
Ashley is still fighting and still recovering. She has been faithful from day one. She's a very godly woman, even though she's been through hell and back. There's a Facebook page called Pray for Ashley, and she updates it often. Her latest post was just a couple of days ago saying how she went cross-country skiing with her brother and his wife. She has a Alaskan Malamute, Bronson, that goes everywhere with her. She had him while living in the house. You can see a dog bed on the floor next to her on the body cam footage, but he was never harmed. Don't worry, guys. I wouldn't be doing this story if a dog got hurt. But you don't hear barking on the body cam footage, so maybe he was staying at the boyfriend's house or just wasn't at the home that evening. And I didn't pry or look up updates on the DeWise kids because hopefully they're doing great and living a good life. In the 1970s, a psychologist named Lenore E. Walker came up with this concept that abuse is a cycle. She interviewed and observed several women and noticed that they had similarities. They didn't all necessarily happen in the same order or progress in the same manner, but Walker was able to see 4 stages emerge. Stage 1, tension building. This is the beginning, the initial signs. This stage can include outburst, irritability, shortness, or lack of patience, or temper starting to show. Stage 2 is incident. That tension from stage 1 is starting to crack. Now it can look different depending on the situation, but this is normally where violence comes into play, whether it be physical, sexual, verbal, breaking things in the house, throwing objects, placing blame and shame, and then the use of manipulation. Stage 3 is reconciliation. This is where the "I'm sorry, please forgive me, I'll never do it again." The one being abused is often left confused during the stage because after experiencing such evil, they're now getting gifts or being shown love, believing that things will get better, and maybe they will, but it is always just going to be temporary. And then stage 4 is calm. Call it the calm before the storm. Things are still fairly good in the relationship, but Walker says the abusive behaviors are there. They're just small and they're slowly working their way back. Like the things that he or she apologized for are now being made into an excuse. Like, for example, "I'm sorry, but it was because blah, blah, blah." Or, "Come on, it's not that big of a deal."
So then the calm turns into more tension again.
Yes, and eventually these excuses fuel the tension and the cycle is doomed to repeat itself. And that's what Lauren went through. She was abused, and then Paul would say something nice and apologize, and then it would just repeat.
So she tries to stay for the good times, or the good that she knows that her husband is sometimes, but then...
And for the kids, probably.
Yeah. That happens a lot.
Domestic abuse is very real, and it's very scary. If you or someone you know is being abused, do not be afraid to ask for help. The National Domestic Abuse Hotline website is a great resource. It is also set up that if you visit the site, you can quickly click on an X to exit, just like that, like a snap of the fingers. And then it teaches you how to delete the evidence of your visit if necessary. You can chat live online. The website is www.thehotline.org. You can text START to 88788, or you can call them directly at 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233. And that is the story of Lauren DeWise.
Good job, love.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wish that Malamute was there, though. I think he probably would have tore him up.
Oh, he would have. Between him and Andrea, they probably would have beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, Malamutes are tough, aren't they?
They are.
They're known to be pretty
large versions of huskies.
Yeah.
They're even bigger than our turd down there. Like, he's what, 70-ish pounds? And they're probably at least 50 plus. They're big.
Mowgli's worthless.
Yeah, he doesn't do shit. He sounds scary. He can look scary. But then he just wants you to hold his paw.
Wouldn't hurt a fly.
Nope.
Well, that wraps up today's episode. Goodbye. No.
Okay, bye.
Check us out on Instagram at Caught Red Podcast. That's PAWD. Like us. Leave a review. Whatever you feel like doing. We like recommendations.
We love recommendations.
If you've got a case from your hometown or somebody you're close to, just send it our way and we will be happy to research it and hopefully do an episode on it. We'll be back again next week, but until then, stay local, shop local,
murder local.